We had some beautiful weather this afternoon with a temperature around 60 degrees. Then after midnight, we get some showers. We got showers for the morning commute tomorrow, showers during the day, about a half inch of rain. Temperature's going to be 54. Skies clear out tomorrow night. The low drops to 45. Then we've got sunshine. Temperature's near 60 degrees on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. This is Meteorologist Bill Evans for 1490 WGZH.
Business Talk with Jim Gamble every Monday night at 6. Interviews with leading figures from the worlds of business, politics, and sports. He's a Charlie Rose on radio, according to Lawrence McDonald, author of the definitive book on the fall of Lehman. Jim is the gold standard in broadcasting, says New York Times chief White House correspondent Peter Baker. Listen to Business Talk with Jim Campbell every Monday night at 6, right after the Lisa Wexler Show on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. The opinions expressed in our talk shows are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio. And now, the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour on 1490 WGCH.
Good afternoon, Greenwich. This is Beth O'Malley with the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour, WGCH 1490. I'm here with Karen Fortunati, who is a very dear friend of mine from many years back, and she wrote a book on bipolar disorder. So today, during the show, we will be talking about both the book and also educating our listeners about bipolar disorder and some of the myths of bipolar disorder, some of the statistics around it. But I think oftentimes in our society, people get confused, not knowing that term, but not knowing specifically clinically what bipolar disorder is. And oftentimes, inadvertently will say, oh, so-and-so's bipolar, as opposed to so-and-so is dealing with depression or dealing with anxiety or having a bit of excitement and irritability. So we'll be talking a little bit about understanding the difference between depression and bipolar, but also how do you diagnose bipolar and how it shows itself in adolescence, because as Karen will speak to, it's very hard to diagnose this specific mental illness in adolescence. And so we'll be talking about that. Before we get started, I really want to congratulate and just announce the most exciting news I got, I think, this year, which was yesterday. We had a guest on the show about 3 weeks ago, Olga Litvienko, and she was representing Greenwich, the town of Greenwich, in the Miss Connecticut pageant, meaning that she'll represent the state of Connecticut should she win. And yesterday afternoon at 2 p.m., Olga was crowned Miss Connecticut. So we are so excited by
Beth
that.
Beth can't hear it, but I'm playing applause right now. That's so wonderful. Good for her. What a nice
girl. How exciting, right?
That's great.
I posted pictures up on my fan page to see her in her beautiful red gown. Rob, we saw her. She's a 26-year-old cute little girl,
lovely,
right?
Lovely girl. Yeah. Very lovely.
And then you see her with the crown in the red gown, and it is just unbelievable that that's Olga. Aww. That's our Greenwich kid who grew up here. So she had years ago won Miss Teen USA. She had had an injury and couldn't play sports, but she's a very active go-getter kind of kid. She's the daughter of immigrants who came over from Lithuania, and she's really just created a life for herself here that's so beautiful, and we're just so proud of her. So, let me also discuss the upcoming shows so you know what to look forward to. I have scheduled, so last week we did a show, and Karen, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but it was on suicide, which was probably the toughest interview I've done yet on air.
Wow.
And it was with a psychologist in Old Greenwich, Adele, and she specializes and writes on suicide. So I often will refer to her in my practice when those issues come up, when someone's lost a family member, either a teen or adult. And now what Adele was talking about is we've gotten to a place where we're very concerned about our older population and the rates of suicide going up in older both men and women.
That's amazing. I'll have to listen to that.
Yeah, it's really a good listen. It was a tough episode to do, but I think it gives a lot of good information. Next week, I have a young woman coming on the show. She's in her mid-20s, Molly Ashcroft, and she is the director of Westport House, which is a sober living facility in Westport for males. And Molly is absolutely unbelievable young woman that I met about 3 years ago at a conference on addiction. Molly has her own recovery for many years now. She was very much, I believe it's both substance abuse and alcoholism, and very involved in that world as a teenager and adolescent, and came out of that with an incredible recovery and amazing treatment, and has really devoted her whole life to helping other kids.
And she's coming on in a couple weeks?
She'll be on next Monday.
Okay.
Next
All right.
Monday.
I'm going to note that.
And then on the 28th, we have Dr. Sonia Mehra, and she is in she's a pediatric doctor in town, and one of her specialties is really the little newborn. So we're going to be discussing some newborn issues. And after that, I have Tom Nash scheduled, an episode on acupuncture. And for those of you who don't know, Tom Nash is a Greenwich resident, and he is one of the top acupuncturists in the country. He educates in New York City on using acupuncture to treat psychiatric illness, which is incredible.
Yes.
Now, in his practice, which is based out of New York and Long Island, his practice is geared towards all issues, but his expertise is really in herbal medicine as well as psychiatric acupuncture.
I love that.
Yeah, it's really
neat.
That
sounds like a great show.
He lives right here in Greenwich. So we're trying to get him to open an office here. So maybe after the show. And then I have Rebecca Camizio coming on to talk about, and she's from Stanwich School. She's a psychologist over there. Wonderful woman in town, also a mom in town. And she will be speaking with me around adolescence during the holidays, stress, and all that good stuff. So let's talk a little bit about what you've done. Karen, when we first met, you and I were actually, we had had careers, and we were taking a few years off, and we were stay-at-home moms.
Yes, that's right? Correct. Right. We were in third grade moms, right?
Third grade, yeah.
Okay.
Third grade at Hampden Hall Country Day.
Yes.
Yeah.
And our kids were great friends. And I had stopped working as an attorney. I had worked full-time until my first child was 2 years old. That was in New Jersey. And then we moved up to Connecticut. And I had my second child then. And we just decided that I would stay home. And that's what I wanted to do.
Right.
I had no desire to go back to work. This is what I wanted. And I consider myself lucky for being able to do that. And then I started getting a little antsy when my kids were in middle grade.
Right.
And so I got my I passed the bar here in Connecticut. And I did some part-time work for a friend of mine, some criminal defense work. And then, let me see, then I did some child advocacy work.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a contract with the state, and I represented parents and children who were subject to DCF investigations or actions. Yet it wasn't all that fulfilling for me.
That's tough work.
Yeah. And I just felt like there was something more for me, something that I'd get really passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I was passionate about was American history, the revolution, the American Revolution. Mm-hmm. On a trip to Boston, we were in the, I think, the Old North Church. And I just remember thinking, what had happened, it just hit me in like the weirdest way. And like every family vacation from then on was American Revolution battlefields, museums. And my family was really patient with me, but I loved being in a museum. So what I wound up doing first was I thought I'd be a history teacher, and I applied for the Connecticut's alternate route to certification to become a public school history teacher, and I was rejected. And I was really, really kind of staggered by that. So I took up writing. I thought, well, I have some time open now. I love history, and I feel like I have a story to tell about the Revolution. And so I started writing a middle grade novel, and I worked on that for about 4 years and got nowhere with it. It was rejection after trying to get an agent. Yeah, yeah. For 4 years. Yeah, yeah. That's really tough. Yeah, it was. And then I started working on this, a young adult novel. So it's a work of fiction. And so this book, I finished it in 2015, and I was able to get an agent right away. And it was just came out, The Weight of Zero, in last month, October 2016. And it's published by Delacorte, which is an imprint of Penguin Random House.
Wonderful. And how exciting for you. I think the topic that you address in the book is bipolar disorder, which had previously been called manic depressive disorder, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it affects more than 3 million Americans. So it's really, this book is going to have such an impact on people really looking at this as a mental illness that needs to be treated and diagnosed and then treated, as opposed to just, oh, they're acting a little nutty and let's not, you know, let's just try and brush it under the carpet and move
right,
on.
Right, right.
You know, as so we're going to tap into this in a minute. As you were talking about being home, what I realized is that our listening audience does not know that you're married to Frank Fortunati, who is a psychiatrist. I met Frank at, I think it was a fundraiser at the school, right?
Yes.
And we were all together, and I was home enjoying being a stay-at-home mom. And Frank had a position at the hospital that he was basically recruiting me for. And I remember you turning to Frank and saying, "Leave her alone. She's home with the kids. She's happy."
Did I really?
Oh, absolutely. And he started arguing with you that, and he was right. He started arguing, "Yeah, but she's in the middle of a really difficult divorce, and maybe she should go back to work so she has her own health benefits." And actually, I hadn't thought of it until your husband said that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Uh-huh.
And now look.
Right. I mean, that was, what, 12 years ago?
Yeah.
So I thank both Karen and Frank for getting me back into the field and working.
That's the way it works, though.
Yeah,
you know that.
I know.
Just kind of, you're such a good person, you know, comes around.
It was really, really a wonderful change in my life for me at that point. Now, today, your husband, Dr. Fortunati, is the acting medical director of the Yale New Haven Psychiatric Hospital. When I worked for him, he was in the children's unit. Is he now both children and adult?
Yes. Yeah. He's in more of an administrative role. When you were working there, he was the unit chief of the child and adolescent unit at St. Raphael's.
Right.
And since the merger, he's become more involved in administrative stuff. He still has a private practice,
okay.
A child and adolescent psychiatry practice. He does some forensic work where he does court evaluations for juveniles in the criminal justice system. And he's been a huge influence on me, being married to him, seeing what he does, learning a lot about psychiatry, mental illness, and especially treatment. Like,
right.
My eyes have been opened in terms of the tremendous potential of good treatment.
Yes, there's so much out there. Where is Dr. Fortunati's practice located, his private practice?
He's in New Haven.
Okay, right in New Haven. Mm-hmm. And prior to being at Yale, prior to being at St. Raphael's, he had been at Yale also in the children's unit. Before?
I think
Yale
was
Children's Studies.
Okay, right. You're
yes.
Right. Uh-huh. That's correct.
Yeah,
so he was training there, and then he had a couple positions there. He did his residency at Yale.
Right.
So, he's been all in many of their different facilities.
Well, working for him, I have to tell you, clinically, I learned more in the staff meetings that he ran than I learned in my whole 2 years of graduate training, because the way that he looks at and explains and teaches his staff about diagnosis and medication and treatment and involving the whole family is phenomenal.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
it's great to hear. I have heard that he's and also it's something he really enjoys, the teaching aspect.
We have to get him in on the show.
Yeah. He'd love to.
All right. So we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, I really want to hear about the book and the story of the book, why you decided to write the book, and what it's really about.
Yes.
So we're going to take a break. This is Beth O'Malley with the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour, 1490 WGCH.
From the WGCH Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans with your Doppler weather radar forecast. WGCH brings you up-to-the-minute weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Looking at some beautiful weather this afternoon with a temperature around 60 degrees. Then after midnight, we get some showers. We got showers for the morning commute tomorrow, showers during the day, about a half inch of rain. Temperature's going to be 54. Skies clear out tomorrow night. The low drops to 45. Then we've got sunshine. Temperature's near 60 degrees on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. This is Meteorologist Bill Evans for 1490 WGCH.
This is Margaret Walsh of Greenwich Library. The Greenwich Library is proud to announce the launch of their newly redesigned website. Over 2 years in the making, this new gateway provides visitors with a virtual experience that is as compelling as a visit to the library itself. Since the last redesign 6 years ago, the library has added a number of services and resources. As a result, many felt the website became difficult to use. An improved user experience and easier navigation were the primary concerns of this redesign. This new online experience showcases the library's diverse range of collections, services, and events with an attractive and uncluttered design. The library will host demo sessions of the new website this month. Please visit greenwichlibrary.org for the schedule and, of course, to explore our fabulous new website. I'm Margaret Walsh of Greenwich Library on 1490 WGCH.
Hi, this is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth on the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour at 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com. And you can hear the show from anywhere on the WGCH.com. We are here today with author Karen Fortunati, who has published or written The Weight of Zero, and it is hope for It helps survivors where they least expect it. And it is talking about bipolar disorder. Now, earlier I mentioned that people often get a little confused between the difference of bipolar disorder, manic depressive disorder, depression. Bipolar disorder is the name today, the diagnosis today for what we used to refer to as manic depressive disorder. And bipolar disorder is not depression, although depression is a part of bipolar disorder. So within bipolar disorder, a client will have periods of elevated mood or irritability that we call the manic episode, but they'll also have depressive symptoms, feelings, really low energy, sad, less motivated, less interest in life and enjoyable activities. And what you'll find is that that's secular. So someone with bipolar disorder can be very high and excitable and have rapid or frenzied speaking, but then a few days, weeks, months later go down to a depressive state. And those cycles can either be rapid, so you can see the cycles over the period of a few days or weeks, but they can also be slower. And so they might be in a depressive state for 6 months, and then they'll cycle up to a rapid state, to a manic behavior. What I'd like to do is really ask Karen, can you tell us about the book?
Yes. Yeah, I'd love to. Before I start out, a lot of people have asked me why a fiction, why a novel about a girl who has bipolar disorder. And the truth is I don't really know why. Inspiration happens in a lot of unknown ways. And I had been working on a earlier story, and then I had the idea for this. Basically, this main character, this 17-year-old girl named Catherine, just appeared in my head, And I knew she had bipolar disorder, and I knew that she also felt that a life with this condition wasn't worth living. So when the reader first meets Catherine, she's in an exceptionally dark place. She's lost her grandmother. She's feels like her friends have abandoned her. She's been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And most of all, she fears the return of her depression. And she calls her depression zero. So she thinks this isn't any kind of life, and she forms a suicide plan. So that's what happens in the first chapter of the book, basically. And what the entire story is about is how that suicide plan gets derailed. Because things start happening in Catherine's life. She gets a new psychiatrist, and this is her second psychiatrist. She didn't connect with her first psychiatrist. She's on a medication that works, and she's been on plenty of medications in the past that did not. She is attending an intensive outpatient therapy program, and she's making friendships there. And finally, there's a sweet romance that develops. The other piece in this puzzle is that Catherine's mother, who had been extremely anxious and pretty much clamped down on Catherine in terms of watching her, sort of cutting off her freedom in her understandable fear, her mother gets a grip on her own anxiety, and the two of them together figure out how to navigate Catherine's way through this diagnosis. So ultimately, through all these things, Catherine changes the way she views herself and her diagnosis and her future. So it's a story of hope. And my goal, given that my husband is a psychiatrist, given that I have family and friends who've been through many mental health issues, my goal was to expose, as for readers, teens or adults, what it's like to have treatment. I didn't want to just say that my character was in therapy. In the book, you are with Catherine when she's talking with her therapist. You see what it's like. She's on medication. She's in an IOP, the intensive outpatient program. So the book really goes into that, pulls back the curtain, and gets into the nitty-gritty of treatment. And I wanted to show all that in a positive and respectful way.
Wonderful. So she starts her treatment at the IOP level, or does she start at an outpatient level or inpatient?
This is outpatient.
Got it. Okay. And for our listeners who are not familiar with the terms, IOP is generally 3 days a week for half days. It can be 5 days a week for half days. There are more intensive outpatient programs that could be 5 days a week or 6 days a week. As opposed to inpatient, where you're sleeping at the hospital and cared for there. But it's still taking a child out of school, an adult out of the workplace, in order for them to be in a therapeutic setting during the day.
Yeah, and in this story, this is based on a program that I was aware of in Connecticut, where it's after school. It's Monday through Friday. She leaves school and she's with other high school students from like 3 to 5:30 or 3 to 6.
Yes, yeah. We have a few programs like that in this area, I believe Westport and up towards New Canaan, and that's a good possibility. I've also worked in IOPs where the kids will just go to school for half a day and then come over to the program. So it depends on the program, and both work very well. I always prefer to have a child stay in school full time if, you know, when possible. One in five. So the statistics around bipolar disorder are interesting because you'll see from 3 to 5 million Americans. And then what's tends to be more commonly diagnosed in women, although they're not really convinced that there is a higher incidence in women. And I think we're still learning a lot about the illness. One in five people that are diagnosed with bipolar have also been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, which is really fascinating. And I can't speak to why that is, but I do have a specialist coming in to talk about borderline personality disorders coming, you know.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Now, it's very difficult to diagnose a child with bipolar. That's something that we always, you know, 25 years ago in my training, we were told you can't even develop it until you're in your 20s. Now we're starting to see the signs, but it's very difficult to diagnose bipolar because a lot of the symptoms mimic what we see in adolescence anyway, right?
Correct. Right, right. That was my understanding based on my research was that it's not a common diagnosis for a teenager to get that because they're hormonal and they have mood swings and it's hard to get a clear-cut manic episode or another flag for the diagnosis.
Right. And so there are different types of symptoms. The behavioral symptoms include irritability, risky behavior, disorganized behavior, agitation, crying, excessive sexuality, hyperactivity, impulsivity, self-harm, and even aggression. Well, as I go through that list of behavioral symptoms,
yeah.
I'm describing, you know,
Teenagers.
Mm-hmm. So, the first time that I worked with someone who was in a manic episode was actually on the phone, and then we had them transferred over. I was working at an employee assistance program on Wall Street, and one of our client companies, top trading firms, had a trader on the floor who was acting very erratically. And so they pulled him into human resources, put him on the phone with me, and he launched into a speech that was like nothing I had ever heard in my entire life. And in that speech, I have to tell you, as much as I knew it couldn't be true, he was so convincing. And he reportedly had written letters to the president and had been, per his own report, invited to the White House and was going to be working there, but they were also going to, at which I was like, oh, well, I know he's an important trader at the mm-hmm. company. I wonder if that's true. Mm-hmm. But then he launched into how they were making a movie on him and then which actors and actresses would be in the movie. Mm-hmm. And it was so extreme and so frenzied, and I couldn't get a word in edgewise. And so I put him on hold and went to my clinical supervisor right mm-hmm. away and said, help, what's going on? And they said, that sounds very much like a manic episode. Mm-hmm. We need to assess him on site and get him to the hospital immediately.
Good, good. Yeah. You know, you know more than I do, but with the various stages of mania, it could be just from, you know, very much increased energy levels to staying up all night to that frenzied speech, really extreme behaviors, financial jeopardy in terms of
spending excessively.
Mm-hmm. Maxing out credit cards. Mm-hmm. Affairs, you know, that hypersexualized behavior, and then eventually into delusions.
Right.
So
this was where it had progressed to delusions. Yeah. But more commonly, I mean, and I say that was, 28 years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I've had the experience of working with a client, even on an inpatient basis, at that level of psychosis. Mm-hmm. In terms of what I'll see in my practice is someone coming in who is spending up compulsively and unable to stop, or highly agitated, not needing much sleep at all mm-hmm. when they're in that manic state. And the family members are usually the ones who are bringing that client to treatment, saying mm-hmm. we need some help. We don't know what's going on. I've also it can mimic what you see when there's substance abuse and a mania that's as a result of substance abuse. So it's very hard to weed out.
Yes, yes.
What
it
the
sounds
issues are.
And because it presents in so many different ways, somebody could be more depressive, while someone could have more periods of mania. So it's just very, very difficult to diagnose.
I had a family member with bipolar disorder who is no longer alive. He was significantly older than myself today when he had a manic episode after, I believe it was just before hospitalization, where he was speaking in the native tongue of Italian, walking up and down the streets, basically yelling at all the neighbors in Italian. And, you know, that was, his manic episodes were always in Italian, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. So that's it's interesting to see that. But then the medications are so phenomenal and so able to work. And there's a classification of medications that are used to treat this as opposed to everyday Prozac, for example.
Right, right. Well, that's the thing that I learned is that bipolar depression is very different than regular depression, and that from what I understand from my husband, you know, one of his greatest concerns is trying to make sure the depression that you're treating is not bipolar depression, because from what I understand, the medications you use for bipolar depression, you don't use on regular depression and vice versa.
Exactly, yeah. And can be dangerous to use on someone with a...
Yes, it can exacerbate it.
Right, right. Why did you feel compelled to write this particular portrayal of mental health treatment?
Well, I do a lot of reading in the young adult category, and I had come across some very popular books that I thought, if my child was vulnerable, I would not want them reading this book.
Yeah.
Because it showed adults as completely clueless and that there wasn't one person who would be able to help them. And I thought that's a bad sign. In my own book, Catherine does not connect with her first psychiatrist, and I did that on purpose because while she does make connections with clinicians in the book and eventually with her own mom, I wanted to show that sometimes when you do reach out for help, you may not connect immediately with the right person for you. So that was on purpose. I mentioned that my husband was a great inspiration for me. I've had two suicides. My life's been touched by two suicides. One was a boss, a colleague, and the other was a family member's sister, an in-law's sister.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened when my kids were very, very young, and I remember being very stunned and affected by them. I wasn't particularly close to either person, but just really staggered that it had, you know, that I had experienced or knew people who had experienced this. And then when I was writing this book, The Weight of Zero, my kids were in high school. And I don't know about you, Beth, but I have this sense that as my kids are growing up and getting independent, which is what we want, you know, happy,
right,
functioning, separate lives, it also freaked me out because the door was closing on parts of my access to their life. Like,
right,
there's a lot of things now that I don't know what's going on. And then I thought to myself, you know, I may not know if my kids are in pain, or I may not know the extent of it.
Yep.
And that's gives me a lot of anxiety. So I think that's in part what propelled me to write this story, because one of them, you know, there's a bunch of things that I would like for readers to get out of it. But the reader in my heart when I was writing it was someone who was struggling with an issue. And I wanted to encourage them to say something and not to carry it around. And that probably just stems, again, from my own, like, maternal worry.
Sure.
You know, once I finished this book in November of 2015, and we went to Europe in December, the month after, and we were in Amsterdam at the Anne Frank House. And my son, Frankie, pointed out a quote to me. It was a video interview running on a loop of Anne Frank's father, Otto Frank. And he says in it, "Most parents don't really know their children." And that really, it kind of soothed me in a way because, you know, parents have felt this forever.
Right.
But if you watch the interview, and you can watch it on YouTube, the astonishment he expresses at what Anne wrote in her diary,
right,
and the girl she appeared to him in public, and they seemed to be like a very had a close father-daughter relationship. He would have never expected it. The seriousness, the self-criticism, it was not the same girl that he knew. And, you know, especially now with, and again, you see what our kids go through in high school, and I always compare it to my experience, and I think, my God, I would never It's a rough, it's a ton of pressure.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all those things that went into it and, you know, which I think inspired me to write the book. Just this fear about our own kids and how much we really know about them.
Right, right. I can't tell you how many times I have a child who goes to their parents and asks them if they can go into therapy. Because now in the schools, everyone talks about therapy. There's therapists in every school here. There's psychologists, there's clinical social workers in all of the schools. And I would say 50% of the time that I'm working with an adolescent or a tween, a 10 to 13-year-old, they've initiated treatment.
Wow. That's phenomenal.
It's
amazing.
You know,
that they're advocating,
yeah.
That they have that confidence to advocate.
But then on the flip side, one of the issues I face is that oftentimes the parents will come in and the parents are actually aggravated because as a mom, I want to know what's going on in my daughter's life. I don't want her to say, I want to go talk to somebody else. Right? And so I'll get that pushback from mm-hmm. families. They might humor the child and give them two or three sessions, at which point I'm aware there are real issues here that we need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes the family is hesitant because they're not aware of what's going on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Frank and I just did a teen mental health presentation in a high school in New Jersey, Del Barton. And I thought initially it was going to be small, like 20 or 30 parents. And it kept growing and growing. And I think it was over 85 parents who attended it.
Wow.
And I think that speaks to the anxiety that we feel as parents and
right.
what our kids are dealing and how best to navigate them and get them to healthy places in their lives. But it was really interesting because a pediatrician came up to me and she said that she changed the way she practiced in the last couple years. She had a patient who was, he was in high school. He graduated, I think his first year of high school, had some suicidal ideation.
Mm-hmm.
And when she saw him after the fact, he was stabilized and he's doing well. But when she saw him after, she was talking to him and he said, no one asked me how I'm doing. No one says, how are you? And the doctor said, now I no longer ask my sophomores and juniors and seniors, what are you thinking about for career? What are you thinking of for college? She just says, how are you?
Beautiful.
And I said, you know what? This is what all pediatricians seem to, should be focusing on.
Right. And not asking the parent, how is your child doing?
Right.
But asking the child, how do you feel? And
right.
How are you doing?
Right,
yep.
Right.
Good point. Well, we are going to be right back. I'm interviewing Karen Fortunati here. She is the author of The Weight of Zero, a book about an adolescent girl who's been diagnosed and is being treated with bipolar disorder. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth on the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour, 1490 WGCH.
From the WGCH Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans with your Doppler weather radar forecast. WGCH brings you up-to-the-minute weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Looking at some beautiful weather this afternoon with a temperature around 60 degrees. Then after midnight, we get some showers. We got showers for the morning commute tomorrow, showers during the day, about a half inch of rain. Temperature's going to be 54. Skies clear out tomorrow night. The low drops to 45. Then we've got sunshine. Temperature's near 60 degrees on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. This is Meteorologist Bill Evans for 1490 WGCH.
Greenwich, you need sports talk. I mean, WGCH really needs sports talk. Rob Adams, that's me, and Paul Silverfarb bring you a doubleheader Monday through Friday from 3 to 4 in conjunction with the Greenwich Sentinel. We're your source for high schools, pro sports, and all sports. Got a story? Want to talk? We've got the outlet for your sports needs. So join Paul and me for our doubleheader weekdays from 3 to 4 right here on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Good afternoon. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth on the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour, 1490 WGCH. I'm here this afternoon with Karen Fortunati, who is an author of The Weight of Zero. This is her first book that has just been published by Random House. And it was published just last month, but it's already been widely recognized and featured. It was featured in 17 magazine. It was already chosen as the Barnes & Noble 2016 Most Anticipated Debut, and one of the Amazon editor's favorite young adult books for the fall of 2016. It was also named one of the 25 best books of October by Apple. She's currently finishing up her second young adult novel, The Ark of a Bullet, and Random House will be publishing that one as well as a third follow. Mm-hmm. And all three books are focused with a bit of a mental health component, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Am I allowed to ask on the air what diagnosis you'll be addressing next?
Yeah. It's the second book is going to be The Ark of a Bullet, and that explores the intersection of mental illness and police. So in the story, it's told through the eyes of a 17-year-old girl and her brother during a manic episode, because he's had undiagnosed bipolar disorder. During a manic episode, he gets shot by a police officer. And so it's a very gray shooting. You can argue for both sides whether or not the cop was justified, and the family obviously is very, very upset. I really wanted to get into the aspect of stigma, and I touched on it in The Weight of Zero, how unlike physical ailments, mental illness, has, I think, an especially people who suffer from it not only have to deal with the management and care of it, but also have to deal with this added burden of stigma and prejudice and discrimination. I've had readers direct message me on Twitter, and I've had emails where they've said, you know, I'm doing it this way because I don't want to say it publicly because I'm afraid that, you know, I'm looking for a job and, someone's going to hold it against me. But I have bipolar too, and I really connected with your book. So it's real. It's out there, you know, the stigma. And you must see it all the time.
Yeah. There are so many myths out there about what bipolar disorder is, what manic depressive disorder is, and there's so much to diagnosing. I mean, there's bipolar 1 versus bipolar 2 versus cyclothymia. I mean, there's a lot. Mm-hmm. And it really takes an actual clinical diagnosis in order to determine that that's the true diagnosis, and then treatment. And treatment comes in different ways. It can be through an IOP or group therapy process where there's individual and group treatment, as well as psychoeducational treatment, family therapy for the family members
Yes.
who are really frustrated with the behaviors, as well as cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT.
Yes.
Medications are used, often antipsychotic medications. There are some SSRIs, but you have to be very, very careful with that. And only a psychiatrist can really choose which medications are most appropriate for that. And we have some nurse practitioners mm-hmm. as well who can treat for bipolar disorder. Sometimes people are hospitalized inpatient, mm-hmm. and some clients are treated outpatient. Some patients are treated outpatient. So in your book, the young woman is treated outpatient. Can you tell me a little bit? I was curious when you said earlier, the first connection with the first doctor she worked with wasn't the best connection. It wasn't a good fit for her. Now, I see that, you know, when I work with folks, I'll say, bring in your child and let's see if it's a good fit. If it's not, I know everyone in town. I can say, you know, so-and-so is going to be a better fit for your child, or I would prefer to see your child work with a male therapist versus a female therapist. So here's why. If they connect with me, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I know that that might not be eating disorders, for example. That's not my number one expertise. I can do some eating disorders, but if it's pretty serious, I need to refer to an expert in that field. And what was the – what did the character in your book report? What was the issue with the first –
I think it wasn't that the first psychiatrist was incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
It was more there was a confusion about her proper diagnosis. It wasn't clear that she had bipolar disorder. So he was treating her for regular depression because the symptoms came on after a very traumatic death that she witnessed. So there's that the medication that she was on wasn't helping. But also it was a personality thing where he was old school and seemed to address her mother more than he talked to her.
Right.
So
right.
She just felt kind of out of the loop and not in control of her own care. And so the second psychiatrist, there's a better rapport. He's a lot more, intuitive, more aware of her, wants to make sure she's on the same page. He's big on explaining goals for medication, having a game plan. If your depression comes back, we're going to have a game plan.
Beautiful.
So he wants her fully aware and educated.
And most likely has a whole treatment plan that he's devised with her input,
yes,
which is so crucial to working with adolescents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just talking and showing up and talking every week is not going to make the progress as if you engage both the family but also the child in creating a treatment plan with defined goals and working towards those goals. In terms of the feedback that you've received from the community, what are you hearing? And who's reading the book, adults or kids?
It's both. I'm surprised. It's so the book has been out a month, and there's about 200 reviews on Goodreads and less so on Amazon. And the reader age runs the gamut from grandmothers, they say they're grandmothers, to my teen readers. The reviews have been consistently positive. Where the reader I was most, the reader that I had in mind when I was writing it, somebody struggling with an issue like this, they've gotten back to me through Twitter or through the reviews or in person and said they really – it's an authentic, it's genuine. Readers who don't have a more serious mental health issue have said they love the book because they have a much better understanding. They're educated on what bipolar can be because this story is just one presentation of bipolar disorder, and there could be a lot of different variations in how bipolar affects somebody. But it's been really moving. I mean, I've gotten some people have reached out to me, and it's been the most gratifying part of the whole writing process is when somebody says, you know what, you nailed it, or I don't feel as alone anymore, or I'm really glad I read this. It's inspired me to be kinder because a lot of the book is that everybody has issues. Everybody does. And some are more public than others, but, a small act of kindness goes a long way.
Absolutely. In terms of, as we're talking about diagnosis and adolescents with bipolar disorder, oftentimes we'll see coexisting disorders. So in other words, substance abuse with a psychiatric illness. In your book, do you address substance abuse?
Yes. Yeah. I wanted this book to cover all aspects of if you're an adolescent or a young woman and you have this, how it affects you. Catherine, the main character, is advised by her psychiatrist to avoid drinking and drugs because there's just a much higher incidence of addiction issues for somebody who has bipolar disorder. Simple like a couple beers may affect someone with bipolar a lot more, a lot differently than someone without.
Yep.
We also address birth control. Catherine's on a medication, and her doctor advises her that, you know, if she is going to become sexually active, you need to take that into consideration, the type of medicine that she's on, because she's not on lithium, but if she was on lithium, she would definitely have to be on birth control because it causes defects. So I wanted this to be like a full kind of full picture.
Oh, beautiful. Terrific. How can people find the book?
So it's at most independent bookstores in Connecticut, and it's also online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, RJ Julia's. So it's in all the bookstores now and online.
Oh, that's terrific. Okay. I'm not sure if you're aware, but I participate in it's a presentation here in Greenwich that we've done at Arch Street, and then most recently Arch Street and the Bruce Museum. In fact, last Thursday night, it's called Stress, Success, and Teenage Setbacks, Mental Health, Let's Talk. And we're doing a program twice a year. So last week was our second program. Now, the first program, I brought in speakers from Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. We had Scooter Braun speak about his experience in working with different clients who might have issues with substance abuse and what that was like actually for him as a human, as from the human side of it, not just as a producer or music producer. This past week, we also brought in a young man who really spoke to what it's like to be in the media, and he's a wonderful young man and role model that came out of a very tough upbringing with tons of depression in Bridgeport, where there wasn't the type of care that he really needed. And he really had to figure out on his own, you know, how to work through his own depression without having the resources that we have available to us. And we had a speaker, Stephanie, who runs the Harris Project, and she lost a son to co-occurring disorders. In other words, he died from an overdose, but he had had many, many treatment experiences. However, those treatment experiences were for substance abuse, and he had not been treated properly for the underlying psychiatric component. So in other words, when he picks up the drink or the drug, he was self-medicating either depression, anxiety disorder, bipolar disorder, OCD, you know, whatever the diagnosis, the clinical underlying diagnosis may have been. So that's considered a co-occurring disorder. And I'll tell you, I've been to a lot of presentations nationwide in this town in New York City. Stress, Success, and Teenage Setbacks last Thursday. I don't think there was a dry eye in the room. Kids got up and told their stories. A young lady spoke about her experience in 9th and 10th grade having depression and losing a mother to breast cancer, and how she'd go into class the next day after mom passes away and acts like everything's fine, and no one has any idea what's really going on in the lives of some of our teens. And I feel like this new program, so I work together with the United Way and Arch Street and Greenwich High School. Kathy Steiner runs the program, and she's a wellness instructor. I had her on my first show here. In terms of let's get our community to come together and really talk to our children.
Yes.
And so the children ran this whole workshop. In other words, the kids were our speakers, our guests. They orchestrated everything. It was incredible.
When is this? So you won't do another one till next year?
In the spring, we'll have another one.
Oh, I have to go to that.
I'll let you know. It'll be on my fan page, O'Malley, on Facebook, O'Malley Wellness, Be Well with Beth. I do apologize. There's a typo in there now. We're trying to get Facebook to correct. But it will also be on my website, O'MalleyWellness.com. And you'll be able to, that's open to the public. It's a free dinner. We have live music. It's just a wonderful.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
What a thing to be involved in.
Yeah. It's really, it's innovative because we have children talking about what their stress is actually mm-hmm. like. And it's really neat. And we've had incredible turnout for the program, so that's really exciting. All right, we are winding down here. Karen, I can't thank you enough for coming in and talking about your book. It's the first time as a clinician I've had a book that I can give out to parents and teens that I really trust the content of in terms of the clinical diagnosis. Thank you so much for joining us at Be Well with Beth on the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour, 1490 WGCH.
The station you grew up with, 1490 WGCH Greenwich.